Everyone, can you hear me? Okay, great. So, as always, I always start this way. It's wonderful to see everybody. And it's nice to see Reb Moshe. I thought Reb Moshe was on vacation. I guess I was wrong. So, it's nice to see you here. Bobby's on vacation, in case people are wondering. And Sheila's on vacation, but she joined us anyhow, which is great. So anyhow, as always, I love the support of our wonderful Jewish Sangha, meditation Sangha, our mindfulness practice journey together. And I love co-creating this sacred spiritual space that nourishes all of us every week. A blessing. So this week's Porsha, Torah portion is Re'eh, which I really don't like, so I'm not going to go into it a lot because I have trouble with like the curses, but I'll just give a brief summary of it. So Moses turns from the general principles of the covenant to the specific details of how the Israelites should live their life, and giving them a choice and prefacing everything with a warning of the choice that lies before them. Blessings if they're faithful to God's laws, and curses if they're not. Deuteronomy 11:26 says, "See, I set before you today a blessing and a curse." I believe that's the first verse for the parsha. So they are to proclaim these to the nation on Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal when they enter the land, and they must destroy all traces of idolatry, establish a central site that God will choose where they worship, where they will worship, and they'll all worship together in unity, and they will offer sacrifices and eat consecrated food. And then Moses issues a further warnings about idolatry, false prophets, clean and unclean animals, the laws of, the kashrut is in there, the laws of tithing is in there, the compassionate treatment of the poor, and the sabbatical year where debts are canceled and Hebrew slaves are set free. So the parsha is pretty rich. It has a lot in it. And it ends with the laws of the three pilgrimage festivals when the nation is to celebrate and the Israelites appear before the Lord at their central place of worship. So it ends with the joyous celebration of our three festivals. Sukkot, Passover, and I'm blanking on the third one. Sukkot, Passover, and Shavuot. The celebration of the three festivals were meant to foster unity, shared joy, gratitude of God's blessings. So, in essence, Re'eh provides a framework for the Israelites' religious, social, and ethical life in the land of Israel, emphasizing the importance of obedience, justice, and communal responsibility. The title of the parsha means to see, to open one's eyes literally and spiritually, to discern the paths ahead and make conscious choices toward blessings and goodness. Re'eh typically precedes Rosh Chodesh Elul, the start of the month of Elul, which begins this Saturday night after Shabbat. Elul starts. In some years, Parsha Re'eh may even be read on Rosh Chodesh Elul itself, if it falls on Shabbat. So I was reading something early this morning that I really liked that Rabbi Sharon Cohen Anisfeld of Hebrew College wrote. She writes, Elul offers us a prolonged preparatory period of personal and communal soul searching leading up to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. This is both a responsibility and a gift. I like the word gift. The word tshuva comes from the ancient Hebrew root meaning to return. That small three-letter root makes a large promise that however lost we may feel, however far we may have wandered or fallen, somehow we can find our way back. Tshuva entails a return that's arduous, uncertain, unpredictable, and alive. It is a return not to what was, but to what is and what might be. It is a return not to who we were, but who we long to be. It is a return not to an irretrievable past, but to each other and to God. In this sense, the call to tshuva is a call to both belonging and becoming. I thought that was a great quote, a call to belonging and becoming. And we all want to become who we truly are and overcome some of the pitfalls that we have in our personalities. So tshuva, I mean, we do this all year long, but this is a more intense period, a little. It really brings it home. So a little focuses on introspection and spiritual preparation for the high holy days, highlighting the month as a time of self-reflection, making amends, and drawing closer to God, as seen in the acronym of the month's name, Ani Ledodi Vedodi Li. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. And the rabbis teach that Elul is the acronym for these words. So historically, Elul is the time period when Moses returned to Mount Sinai to plead for forgiveness for the sin of the golden calf. Elul is the month for us to work on forgiveness of ourselves and others. And perhaps as we forgive, we become open to a greater divine revelation. As difficult as it might be, forgiveness is often the best thing that we can do for ourselves. Though forgiveness is a spiritual practice for the entire year, it's a major theme for this month of Elul. And forgiveness does not mean that we condone negative behavior, nor do we just forget or ignore the hurt. But we can and need to let go of the anger. Forgiveness asks us to see beyond the limits of our personality or that of the person who injured us. In the act of forgiveness, we substitute compassion for blame, and we trust ourselves and God that we have grown and will continue to grow from the pain and challenges we have experienced. As liberating as it is to forgive others, it's also important to love and forgive ourselves. Elul is a time of spiritual accounting. For those who have had a relatively easy year, it may be easier to come to terms with the past year. For those of us who've had a difficult year, we may become discouraged, feel burdened by setbacks, and question our capacity for real change. Disappointment may be a natural occurrence at this time, because it's launching a path for tshuva experience whereby we hope we can change, be more compassionate, happier, and better people. And in my own experience, I'm always trying to change the same thing year after year. So it's not very different. So I'm going to read from some different sources about Elul, or what I thought resonated with Elul. And after each one, I'll give a few seconds of silence so that you can see if you resonate with it or see what comes up for you, see how it may influence your practice or how your practice may influence what I'm reading. So the first one is Chabad claims Elul is a time for journeys of the soul. And a famous Hasidic metaphor, during Elul, the divine presence is compared to a king who leaves his palace and comes into the fields, making himself accessible to all. Unlike the high holidays, the high holy days, when the king is enthroned in majesty, Elul is when God is approachable in a simple, loving way, ready to hear every prayer and request without barriers. Elul's 40-day span, Elul through Yom Kippur, corresponds to Moses' final ascent to Mount Sinai to receive the second set of tablets, during which God revealed the 13 attributes of divine mercy. Mystically, these attributes are said to shine more strongly during this time, granting special power to prayer and repentance. Elul is the work of the heart and is linked to Kabbalah with the Sfirah of Bina, understanding, the place of the heart's understanding. The mystical work of Elul is hitbonadut, deep contemplation, preparing the heart to align with divine will and enter the new year with clarity. Hitbonenut focuses on understanding and realizing the presence of God in the world to achieve spiritual growth and attachment to God. And in our practice, I mean, hitbonenut is deep in our practice, some practices we concentrate on our breath, but there are other practices that contemplate on a saying or an idea or words, and they see, and then you contemplate that, and then you see what else comes up for you. Okay. Well, I'll pause for a couple of seconds. Rabbi Nachman of Bratslav said, "Dear God, teach me to begin anew, to renew myself along with all of creation, just as you renew the entire world each day. Show me how I can break free of the constraints of my habits, the restraints of my insecurities, the shackles of my unwarranted fears. Teach me, dear God, to make a fresh start. To break yesterday's patterns, to stop telling myself I can't when I can, I'm not when I am, I'm stuck when I'm entirely free, eminently free." This is from Lily Tomlin, who's not Jewish, but I thought this quote was great. "I always wondered why somebody doesn't do something about that. Then I realized I was somebody." A little bit of humor here. This is actually from the Machzor Lev Shalem, which we're going to use this year for the high holidays. So Rabbi Chaim of Tzants used to tell this parable. A man wandering in the forest for several days finally encountered another. He called out, "Brother, show me the way out of this forest." The man replied, "Brother, I too am lost. I can only tell you this. The ways I have tried have led nowhere. They have only led me astray. Take my hand and let us search for the way together." Rabbi Chaim would add, So it is with us. When we go our separate ways, we may go astray. Let us join hands and look for the way together. This is from the Dalai Lama. Today, there are only 2 days in the year that nothing can be done. One is called yesterday, and the other is called tomorrow. Today is the right day to love, believe, do, and mostly live. And I'm going to read a few paragraphs from Rabbi Alan Liu of Blessed Memory from his book, This Is Real, and You Are Totally, Completely Unprepared. At Tisha B'Av, we became aware of our brokenness. During Elul, we cultivated an awareness of our actual circumstances, the dust that we will return to, the fragility and impermanence of our life. If we succeeded in awakening our lives to, sorry, if we succeeded in awakening to our lives, we saw clearly how every moment of our lives, every breath, every thought is only a passing shadow, a fugitive cloud, a fleeting breeze, a vanishing dream. This being the case, how do we acquire a twofold in this world sufficient to do tshuva? Again, this is from Alan Liu. Holiness is the great nothing that appears in all religious traditions of the world in various poetic guises. It is an ineffable intensity, an oceanic sense, a warm flash of light, a marriage of the soul, a mighty wind of resolution, a starry grace, a burning bush, a wide stretching love, an abyss of pure simplicity. And as we've mentioned, it is the word, the angel's cry, the word that rings throughout heaven. In short, holiness is an all-encompassing emptiness. In short, holiness is heaven, and Rosh Hashanah is all about our connection to heaven. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov said that when the shofar blows 100 times in Rosh Hashanah, a bridge is formed between heaven and earth. Two more from Rabbi Alan Liu. The real work we have to do at this time of year, I think, is to find compassion no matter what. But we have to find it for ourselves before we can be of much use to others. And the last one, from the great pit of our heart, we sense the seeing eye, we sense the knowing ear. Watching the drama of our lives unfold, watching it with unbearable compassion. So let's take a moment of silence before we open it up for questions.